The hour of 4:30 having arrived, I will call to order the Finance Committee of Monday, June 29th, 2026, and ask Director Schmidt-Aki to please call the roll.
Council President Madison.
Here.
Alder Revere.
Here.
Alder Vitiver.
Here.
Alder Evers.
Here.
Alder Lankella.
Here.
Alder O'Brien.
Here.
Mayor of Quorum.
Thank you. We have nobody registered for general public comment, but we do have registrants wishing to speak on items 3, 11, and 12. So those will be separated for comment. Are there any disclosures or recusals on items on today's agenda? Seeing none.
Mayor, we have a presentation on number 16.
Thank you. All right, so then that'll take us to the consent agenda. As previously noted, we'll be separating items 3, 11, 12, and 16. Are there other items that members of the body would like separated from the consent agenda at this time? President Madison. President Madison, you're muted.
Oh, still in 2026. Okay. So item number 2 and then all of the items between 9 and 15.
Also inclusive of 9 and 15, Alder?
9 through 15. Yep. So 9. Yep. And then I thought it was in an email that 3 was going to be re-referred.
The intent on item 3 is to make a motion to re-refer. That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Alder Revere.
Thank you, Mayor. Please separate agenda item number 4 for a question or two.
Item 4. Thank you, Alder. Are there any other items that Alders would like to see separated from the consent agenda at this time? Seeing none, then on items 5 through 8, President Madison, a motion, please.
A motion to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt items 5 through 8 with the recommendations therein. Is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor? Seeing no objection, those items and their recommendations are adopted. And that will take us then to item 2, which is Legistar 93615, creating a new classification of social services program supervisor in Comp Group 18, Range 7 in the salary schedule, and creating a new 1.0 FTE position in the new classification within the 2026 CDA housing operating budget. On item 2, President Madison, a motion, please.
Motion to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt item 2. On item 2, President Madison, questions for staff?
Yeah, I just wanted to get an overview because it looks like it's a new classification and try to get a better understanding of what the role does.
And I'm looking for, Julie Trimble is here from HR. Julie?
Yes, thank you. So this position is being created to focus more specifically on the social services and resident services for tenants at the 3 different properties that the city oversees. Right now, the tenant services aides are reporting to the housing site managers at each of those locations, and they have a broad range of responsibilities from maintaining the properties to ensuring the clients are getting services and helping with all kinds of areas related to properties. So they have professional staff, they have maintenance staff, And so the goal with this was to pull out those tenant services aides, having them all report to one supervisor so that they are providing consistent services across the three properties, and having somebody in that role who really has a background and experience in that type of work. Because right now the housing site managers, although they are supervising them, they just don't have the expertise necessarily, and they really want to expand the services and the outreach to communities, community organizations.
Thank you. Because so I was just right at your last couple of words. So it sounds like they likely be partnering with organizations across the city to make sure that resources could be on site or however they end up helping people access. Okay, perfect. All right. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Alder. Are there other questions for staff on item two? Seeing no questions, item two has been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor of item two? Seeing no objection, recording unanimous vote in favor of item two. We'll take us to item three, which is Legistar 93627. Which would recreate the 1.0 FTE position number 2579 of administrative assistant in Comp Group 20, Range 14 as an IT specialist, one in Comp Group 18, Range 6 within the police department operating budget. On item three, President Madison, the appropriate motion is to re-refer to the personnel board on 8-5, the Finance Committee on 8-13, and the Common Council on 9-8. Would you make such a motion?
Yep. So motion to refer to, what is the board PB on?
Personnel.
Personnel board on August 5th. I wrote PB, but I would admit. So personnel board on August 5th, back to Finance Committee on August 31st, and then to Common Council on September 8th.
That's the motion. Is there a second? Moved and seconded to re-refer on item three. We have one registrant wishing to speak, Rick Marks of Oregon, Wisconsin, representing AFSCME Local 6000. Do we have Rick?
Mayor, I don't see Rick in attendance.
Okay. So then on item three, are there any questions for staff? Seeing no questions for staff, is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of re-referral? Seeing no objection, that item will be re-referred as stated. And that will bring us to item four, which is Legistar 93634, deleting the parking enforcement lead worker classification in Comp Group 16, Range 13, and the parking revenue lead worker classification in Comp Group 16, Range 11, and creating the classification series of field lead worker 1 and 2 in Comp Group 16, Ranges 14 and 15, respectively, in the salary schedule, and creating four new 1.0 FTE positions in the 2026 parking division operating budget and reallocating employees into the new classification. On item four, President Madison, a motion, please.
Motion to adopt.
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt item four. Alder Verveer, questions for staff?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I very much support the resolution. I don't have questions of HR staff. However, I was hoping transportation staff would be with us just to give us an update on timing of the opening of both the Lake Street parking ramp and the inner city bus terminal. But I don't see anyone offhand from transportation. Would perhaps someone from engineering or planning know the current schedule for those openings, or perhaps Mayor, you know yourself?
It's probably on my calendar, but I think your only hope is if Director Wachter knows that schedule off the top of his head, or Director Michalajewski.
That's what I thought. Or maybe the city engineer too, I don't know.
Everybody seems to be volunteering, Alder. Perhaps we can get your question answered offline.
Thank you. I will certainly do that. I'll just say that last time I talked to Stephanie Cox about it a while ago was a tentative August opening of the Lake Street ramp and September opening of the bus terminal. Just curious if that was still the case. So if perhaps they're listening later or someone could let them know I have the question, that would be great. Otherwise, I'll reach out myself. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Alder. On item four, it's been moved and seconded. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor? Seeing no objection, we record a unanimous vote in favor of item four. I'm going to suggest that for items 9 through 15, we take them up together since they're all substantially similar. So, President Madison, on items 9 through 15, a motion, please.
Motion to adopt items 9 through 15.
Second.
Is there a second? Moved and seconded to adopt. Then on items 11 and 12, which are included in that, we have one registrant wishing to speak. Bonnie Rowe of District 11 is registered on both items. So, Bonnie, do we have Bonnie with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, members of the Finance Committee. I'm speaking today in strong opposition to file number 93406 regarding the TID 44 amendment, as well as file number 93412 regarding TID 46, and I request that they be removed from the consent agenda for individual debate. Right after this public comment period, this committee is scheduled to receive a presentation from staff outlining the severe 2027 operating budget outlook. We already know the core takeaway. The administration has mandated an across-the-board 2% operational cut for city agencies. We're actively telling our frontline public safety and community infrastructure services that they must absorb personnel gaps and service friction because the money isn't there. We're telling the Madison Police Department to absorb recruitment and onboarding gaps within their 492 authorized officer cap, and we are tracking tight emergency parameters for our fire department. Yet on this very same agenda, the city is using its statutory mechanisms to borrow and spend $11.9 million in combined capital expansions to extend the operational life cycles of two highly mature, highly successful tax incremental districts. TID 44 alone sits on an estimated $114 million in incremental taxable property value. If this district were allowed to move toward its natural dissolution, that $114 million would flow directly back onto the general tax rolls. It would immediately relieve our cash-starved general fund and provide the exact structural remedy needed to protect basic city operations. Instead, by adding $6.5 million in new project costs to TID 44 for land banking and stormwater improvements, we are artificially prolonging its lifespan out to 2029. We cannot continue to treat our capital expansions and our operational crises as if they exist on two separate planets. Ring-fencing hundreds of millions of dollars in established property value to fund localized, non-urgent development projects while simultaneously enforcing austerity on street-level operational service shifts the tax burden directly onto everyday Madison homeowners and renters. If our structural deficit is an emergency, our policy choices must reflect that emergency across all funds. I urge the Finance Committee to vote to place on file or place a formal committee hold on these two amendments. Let these mature districts move toward dissolution so their tax bases can serve the entire city's general fund. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the registrant? Seeing none. Then items 9 through 15 have been moved and seconded. Anticipating questions for staff, I believe Director Mikulajewski has a short presentation.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, and good evening, members of the Finance Committee. I'm here this evening with Director Wachter, and I'll just be providing a very brief overview of the presentation that was provided at Plan Commission, and Director Wachter and myself are then available to answer questions. For those watching at home, I'm Matt Mikulajewski, the Economic Development Director for the city. And again, I'm gonna briefly give you the Finance Committee an update as to what is being proposed through these TID-related items. The first is an amendment to TID 44. TID 44 extends along Cottage Grove Road from Monona Drive to a little past Stoughton Road. And what we're proposing in TID 44 is to amend the project plan by $6.5 million. This includes $4 million for acquisition of the Royster Corners properties, some stormwater-related work adjacent to Cottage Grove Road, and small business support. TID 46 is proposing to be amended. This is the West Side TID District that includes Exact Sciences, and then snakes its way up to Mineral Point Road and then towards Midvale. We're proposing a lot of public works improvements, $6.4 million total of investments. This includes sanitary sewer work, park-related work, stormwater work, some improvements to Science Drive, and then our small business programs. TID 50 is the State Street TID located downtown. And we have a rather modest amendment to this TID, $285,000 for some sanitary sewer improvements. TID 51 is the South Madison TID that extends along South Park Street and then to points east and a little to the west. We are not proposing any new expenditure of funding within this TID. What we are proposing, though, is to change some of what is proposed in the current project plan to make $25 million available for housing development in the South Park Street corridor, and this will be primarily targeted towards the Park Badger project. TID 54 is the North Side TID that extends up the Pennsylvania Packers corridor. This is where Oscar Mayer is located, the old Oscar Mayer. And the amendment that we're proposing for this TID is the $2.8 million that was previously approved by the Common Council for Rialto Fusion. TID 56 is one of two new TIDs that are being proposed this evening. So this is a brand new TID. And consequently, as with many brand new TIDs, what we do at the beginning of implementing a new TID district is we work with our colleagues throughout city government, especially city engineering, and we ask ourselves, you know, what are the projects that we will likely see in this TID over the next decade? And then we build a project plan based on those projects. And so what you see here is over $10 million of various public works improvements, plus $1.5 million worth of park improvements. These have been articulated in terms of what they could be, but I should note for these new TID districts that what we ultimately will spend in that TID can be amended at a future date if more urgent projects come forward. We also have in this TID $2.9 million for development loans, funding for small businesses support, and then as with all of our TIDs, we have a $500,000 to cover various admin costs. And then finally, we have TID 57, which is also a West Side TID. I think I forgot to mention that TID 56 is located on the west side near the intersection of Mineral Point and Yellowstone. TID 57 is located close by, also on the west side, northwest of Whitney Way and the Beltline. And in this TID, again, we also have an $8.5 million placeholder for public works-related projects, $2 million for development loan at Odana Medical Circle project, small business support, and then admin costs. And with that, I'll stop sharing. And myself or Director Wachter are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Director Mikulajewski. President Madison, questions?
Yeah, just I might have missed the slide, but I think I counted $5.5 million in small business development assistance. Does that sound correct?
Yes, somewhere around that number, yes.
And then in very plain language, having not had coffee since around noon, what kind of, does this also include like commercial ownership assistance grants, or I just want to make sure I understand from previously serving on EDC, what does it include?
Yes, for all of these districts, it includes the facade grant program, the building improvement grant program, the commercial ownership assistance program, and then for some of the districts, it includes the small captive program as well.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, President Madison. Other questions for staff on these items? Alder Vitiver.
So we had a public speaker who said that if we closed the two TIDs,
at their natural conclusion point, it would immediately solve our budget issues for the operating budget. Is that the correct assessment in your view?
I don't and believe
it's fine if this goes to Director Schmidtke.
Yes, I'll direct it to Director Schmidtke.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for that question, Alder Bitterver. So the way that the TIDs interact with the levy limit, so if you all recall, you know, how much the city can spend in its operating budget from a revenue perspective is mainly dictated by the state, and particularly the levy limit. And so when a TID closes, half of the value is then brought into the levy limit calculation. And but you have to remember that in the city, we have almost $50 billion of tax base. So for example, to take the TID 44 example of $114 million in value, half of that would come into the levy limit calculation. And then that sort of ratio of the 57 million or half of 114 million divided by $50 billion of the tax base means that the net effect on the levy limit is about $200,000. So I'm going to talk a little bit later about the city's budget gap going into 2027. And 200,000 is, I would say, a relatively small share of that. So when we talk about the TID incremental tax base, these are relatively small shares of the total tax base in the city. And they have, if they were to close, they have some effect on the levy limit, but not a a very large impact on the levy limit and how much revenues can increase to meet operating costs to continue.
But would they have any impact on the expenditure restraint limit? And that's the biggest thing we're up against.
Anytime you add revenues in the general fund, you then have to take into account the effect on expenditure restraint as well. So both of those then act in tandem.
Okay, sorry. So we would get more revenue, but then
if we spent that revenue, that moves us closer to the expenditure restraint limit.
Right. So I'm just trying to understand. So we're in the operating budget as we look ahead. Our number one constraint is expenditure restraint. And so it's not the levy limit, it's the expenditure restraint. So if we get that additional revenue, that doesn't bring down our expenditures to expenditure restraint. It doesn't offset it because it's revenue expense.
Right. We have an expenditure issue, you're right, and I'll describe that in the presentation later. But we also have a revenue issue, right? We're still above the levy limit right now with the cost to continue for 2027. And in every budget, we're above the levy limit. Then it becomes a matter of, you know, how do we close that revenue gap? And we are fortunate to have fund balance in the short term to close that. But as you recall from the five-year forecast, and again, I'll go into that in the presentation, we have gaps every year on the revenue side, as well as in 2027, in terms of where our costs are, we also have an expenditure restraint issue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Alder Figueroa Cole, questions?
A quick question for Dave and then one for Matt. So, Dave, for the calculation that you made in there about how much that will impact our budget, is that then the portion that comes to the city, or is your number in general? Do we still then have to give, or from the number that you gave, we still have to give the percentage to MATC, Dane County, and all of those other entities on the school system, for example?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I was just talking in terms of the city budget.
Okay.
And how the levy limit would function for the city. all of the property value in effect would go back onto the tax rolls. It would affect the tax rate for all of the taxing jurisdictions.
So not 100% of the money doesn't come from TID, doesn't come to us. We had to split it to the other agents, to the other taxes.
You're talking about two different things.
Okay.
So Dave is just talking about the room that gets added to the levy limit, and you're talking about the cash in the TID that gets dispersed.
Right, that's exactly what I'm, so that's kind of the money that, like, just closing this TID doesn't mean that we would take all this money. We still have to share with other entities, right?
Yes.
Okay, so yes. What I was describing, right, if there's a surplus in the TID when the TID closes, that money has to be distributed proportionally.
Got it. All right, thank you. And then Matt, for, I don't know, a few years ago, you guys helped me put a flow chart together, of course, on this particular topic. If I remember correctly, I mean, the money that we, once a TID is working, we use the revenue from those TIDs to do infrastructure work, you know, like repairs and things like that, or new roads, sidewalks, things like that. So if we don't, what is the consequence of not having this type of resource available to us to pay for those jobs?
Sure. Thank you, Alder. So that's, I think, an important point is, under the city's TIF policy, we limit the amount of TIF support that we provide to development projects to usually around 55% of the increment stream that's generated by those projects. And one of the reasons we do that is it reserves roughly 45% of the increment that's generated to be used for public infrastructure-related projects, park-related projects. So to the Alder's question, if we did not have TIF dollars available to complete these park projects and infrastructure projects, then we would be reliant on the general levy and our general geo-borrowing, non-TIF supported geo-borrowing in the capital budget to do this work, with some exceptions that obviously the utilities are have their utility funding and the park has some improvement fees, but generally speaking, we would need to use other sources to cover these projects.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Matthews, questions for staff?
Thank you, Mayor. I think Alder Figueroa got my question about, right, the sewer utility and the stormwater projects that we need to do. We would still have to find a way to do those, just not using this money. So thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions for staff on items 9 through 15? Seeing none, items 9 through 15 have been moved and seconded. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, then, is there objection to recording unanimous vote in favor of items 9 through 15? Seeing no objection, we'll record unanimous vote in favor of those items. And we will move on then to item 16, which is Legistar 93677, 2027 Operating Budget Outlook and Request Guidance. Dave, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mayor. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Great, thank you. So I will be walking through an overview of the 2027 budget. And we'll cover the budget calendar and deadlines associated with that, as well as the outlook for the 2027 operating budget. That includes the state limitations on the budget. We've gone through a cost to continue, what that looks like from a revenue and expenditure perspective. We'll revisit the 5-year forecast of revenues and expenditures, and then the approach for 2027. We'll talk about the budget guidance that the mayor released a couple weeks ago, and then completing the proposals. That's actually we won't cover that. That was with the agencies. All right, just a reminder on the key dates for budget development. We've talked a little bit about the capital budget. That started a little bit earlier with the kickoff in mid-March. Agencies submitted their budgets in mid-April, and the executive budget for capital will be introduced in early September. And this committee will meet in mid-September for briefings and at the end of September on amendments. The operating budget, we just had the kickoff on June 9th, and those requests are due in mid-July. And then the mayor will meet with the agencies in mid-August, and then decisions will be made, and the executive budget will be introduced in early October. And then again, Finance Committee briefings in mid-October and amendments by the Finance Committee at the end of October. Then both budgets come together at the council, where there's the amendment process as well as the council deliberations on both budgets. All right, as we've talked about two times, there are some issues around how we have to put the operating budget together each year. Again, first and foremost, we have to have a balanced budget. We have to have revenues equal expenditures, but then the state legislature puts further limits on some are on the revenue side, meaning that we can only increase our levies by a certain amount. We're also limited primarily to the property tax. And so the rate of growth in those revenues does not keep pace with the cost of continuing current services, particularly in a growing city like Madison, as well as kind of the inflation issues we've been facing over the last few months. Again, as a reminder, the voters approved a $22 million referendum at the end of 2024. That helped to close a large structural gap in the budget for 2025. That funding has been permanently added to the tax base, but again, revenues under state law don't keep pace with that expenditure growth. We have the five-year plan. I'll talk about that in a few slides. On the expenditure side, we have the expenditure restraint incentive program from the state, and that is basically a program where the city receives funding, about $7 to $9 million annually, if it keeps its growth in expenditures to roughly the rate of inflation. And what we're finding more recently is we're exceeding not only the levy limit, but the expenditure restraint limit as well. This graph, just a couple of graphs, just give you a sense of what we've seen with issues around the levy limit and expenditure restraint. You'll see that we have revenues are limited by the levy limit, and then expenses exceed those revenues, but have been typically prior to 2026, below the expenditure restraint limit. All right. Now in 2025, the referendum helped lift those revenues so that they were in balance. We closed that gap with a permanent increase in levy to cover expenses, and we were below the expenditure restraint, but much closer than in prior years. We also do amendments each year. We'll do projections of agency spending compared to budget. And we often will appropriate additional funds to meet costs that are occurring in the agencies above the adopted budget. And we'll apply fund balance to meet that. And that typically brings us up to the expenditure restraint limit. Now in 2026, what we found is that expenses and revenues were on par, but at the expenditure restraint limit, but below the levy limit. That was due to a number of factors, primarily additional state aid that the city received. You heard about the municipal services payment when you were briefed by the city's lobbyists at the state level. And the increase that was in the state budget, Madison benefited from that considerably, as well as other revenue growth, particularly investment income. And so we were able to then basically reduce the amount that we needed from the levy and fill that gap with other revenues. But it brought us up, allowed us to be very close to the expenditure restraint limit. Now, if we go $1 over the expenditure restraint limit, we lose that $7 to $9 million of state aid that the city receives each year. So expenditure restraint limit is very important. So that gives you some background on the revenues and expenditure picture. When we start the operating budget process each year, we go through a cost to continue process with each agency. We look at revenue projections citywide. We take out any one-time funding that may have been provided in the previous budget. We estimate salary and benefits for the upcoming year, including any step and longevity increases for each position in the city, as well as any negotiated increases. We also put in estimates or placeholders of what we expect benefits to go up, such as health insurance and retirement, and we will update those over the summer. And we also look at internal service costs for fleet, insurance, and workers' comp, as well as update the city's cost allocation plan, which is basically the enterprise agencies, such as the utilities, how much they pay to support central administrative costs. The agencies then are looking at their own budgets. We're removing one-time funding, looking at their costs, annualizing any partial year commitments, of which there are several coming in from the 2026 budget. We look at any sort of contracts that are currently in place for services and any sort of inflation associated with that and built into those contracts. And then we meet with the agencies one-on-one and walk through all of these estimates. So we went through that entire effort, looked at revenues, looked at expenditures, looked at the levy limit, the expenditure restraint limit. We're estimating revenues right now of about $472 million. That's about 4.3% higher than the adopted 2026 budget. You'll see the elements of that there, primarily the allowable increase in the levy, as well as expected increases in ambulance fees due to some changes in state law in terms of securing waivers from the federal government for Medicaid costs related to ambulances. Increases in building permit revenue. We're expecting some decreases in some areas, and you can see listed there, as well as other adjustments. On the expenditure side, we're projecting to continue current service levels about $483 million. And so that's about 6.7% higher. A little under $10 million is salary and benefits. The same amount roughly in terms of how much general fund support is needed to maintain funding levels in the metro budget. We have a placeholder in that for general fund debt service. And just as a reminder, debt service is excluded from the expenditure restraint calculations under state law. And then there are some non-personnel costs. We have software cost increases. The library has a contract with Dane County. This is a state law process around services that are where Madison residents go to libraries outside of Madison, and we have to pay into that because of the amount of that type of activity happening. We've got increases in costs for legal services and consulting for various challenges to property tax assessments, building maintenance costs, and other expenses, as well as $1.5 million for increased fleet charges, primarily due to increased fleet costs. So you put those two numbers together, we have an $11 million gap between revenues and expenditures. and $7.2 million above that expenditure restraint limit. So using the graphs that we showed you before, you can see the revenues are at that the levy limit, and we're $11 million above the levy limit, as well as another $7.2 million above the expenditure restraint limit based on this cost to continue expenditures to maintain current programs. So diving into the cost to continue in a little more detail, that almost $10 million in salaries and benefits includes a 3% pay increase for general municipal employees, that's what GMEs are, as well as protective service, so police, firefighters, as well as step and longevity adjustments. There is a reduction in the clerk's office. Obviously, we have more elections in 2026. There'll be fewer elections in 2027. We have built in increases for health insurance based on preliminary information from the state, and then increases for retirement, and assuming a rate increase there. We expect that those numbers will be revised over the summer as we get updated information from the state. We do maintain, on average, a citywide salary savings rate of about 3%, and keep in place the 0.75% reduction to every agency's budget. And then we did do a recalculation of salary savings that did add a little bit. This is due to one-time adjustments made by agencies. In the elections area, a little under $600,000 reduction. That's due to the staffing and postage costs. But the overall clerk's costs only went down about $200,000. That's due to increases for facility rental, other costs, as well as higher insurance costs for that. I mentioned the placeholder for debt service. There is an increase in general fund due to one-time support in 2026 for the zoo from room taxes. And I mentioned the consulting and legal services costs for property assessment challenges. We are seeing increasing software costs, a little under $1 million in IT, and then funding in police as well. And then building maintenance costs, and the library contracts and other costs related to purchase services. The Metro subsidy is going up almost $10 million. So from about a little under $25 million in 2026 to a little under $35 million in 2027. This reflects increased costs for personnel, fuel, as well as an expected significant increase in paratransit provider costs as those contracts are up for renegotiation. The subsidy to public health based on cost to continue and equalized value, that's how we split it with the county, about $740,000. The fleet budget is up about $2.2 million. A lot of that is due to fuel as well as other adjustments. We do get some increased billings from the enterprise agencies, so like the water utility, stormwater, and so on, to help pay for central administrative costs. It's about $150,000. And then we're seeing increases in costs for liability insurance as well as the workers' compensation fund. So that's the cost to continue, the gaps associated with that. This is the five-year plan that we first started with the 2025 budget, and this is the update for 2026. We will update it again for the 2027 executive budget. It does assume that these gaps will be partially closed by using about $40 million of the city's fund balance in the general fund. The model does reflect some growth in personnel costs and inflation, but did not factor in the current pretty significant growth in fuel prices, nor did it factor in the significant growth in the Metro subsidy. So fund balance helps with the revenue side, but it does not help with the expenditure limit issue. And so that's why reductions on the expenditure side will be needed in order to balance the budget. A little more background on Metro, just given the pretty significant increase in the subsidy over the last couple of years. This just compares Metro revenues with expenditures over the last roughly 10 years and kind of breaks down those revenues into each of the components, the vehicle registration fee, which started in 2020, federal aid was kind of the gold part of the column, state aid, which is the gray part, fares and passes, which are that sort of light blue. And so these exclude the city subsidy. So you can see in 2017, that subsidy was a little over $10 million and stayed at that level until obviously the pandemic dramatically changed ridership, the funding mix as the federal government stepped in to help support transit operations, vehicle registration fee came into effect. That federal money is basically used up by 2024 and kind of a return to larger subsidies over the last few years as Metro's sort of own source revenues and federal and state aid do not really grow and have not grown. All right, so that's a little background on the big picture, on the outlook, and then we'll turn to the mayor's guidance to agencies in developing their agency requests for 2027. First of all, you know, based on what you saw there with the expenditure restraint issues, agencies will have to include a 2% reduction plan in their proposals, and they cannot make any sort of new requests. And every agency will be required to provide that 2% reduction. We'll continue the salary savings and the budget efficiencies. No new positions, no supplemental requests. And this has been expanded to enterprise and restricted funds that have typically not had to put forward reduction proposals, basically to keep in mind the overall affordability to residents and taxpayers, both property taxes as well as user fees. For the general library and fleet funds, we have that 0.75% reduction. They'll have to manage to that. And enterprise and restricted funds, they're expected to develop an operating budget that is consistent with current revenue projections and work to limit the growth in user rates to the extent possible. I've talked a lot about what salary savings is. All agencies have to budget for salary savings. That average is about 3% citywide. It varies. Very small agencies don't have salary savings requirements. Larger agencies have the 4%. The enterprise funds and restricted funds will propose a 2% reduction compared to their base budget proposal. And agency heads are directed to look at all of their services and activities with a goal of preserving core services, but looking at lower priority services that could be eliminated and trying to avoid as much as possible any sort of one-time savings or reductions in administrative costs. Enterprise and restricted funds have not had to do cut exercises in the past, but do have to this time, as I mentioned earlier, around affordability. Agencies can look to reallocate within their budgets, but they can't do that to increase their expenditures, and they cannot charge other agencies to try to balance their budget. No new position requests, as I mentioned, and no supplemental requests. We have a new approach for an optional five-year planning document that agencies can sort of develop to look at emerging issues around costs that they may see in on the horizon, such as a new facility is going to be built and they need to operate it, or they have new software or equipment coming. coming into place that need to be kept into taken into account for future budgets. Again, agencies are asked when they develop their budget to keep in mind citywide priorities around racial equity, social justice, sustainability, and look to be creative and innovative and looking across agencies for ideas around how to find efficiencies. And then new for this budget, we'll be looking at service indicators that have come out of the Results Madison data engagement and looking to review those and look at ways to publish those as a part of the executive budget in October as part of building out greater work towards outcome budgeting. All right, with that, I'll stop sharing and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director Schmidtke. Questions for Dave on item 16. Alder Vidover.
So if we were to raise bus fares, that would help us on the revenue side, but it would do nothing for the expenditure restraint limit. Is that correct?
No, it's not correct. So if you raise bus fares, that's in a different fund than the general fund. Expenditure restraint only applies to the general fund. So those things supported by property taxes. And so if bus fares were raised, that would mean less of a general fund subsidy needed. And that would shrink that $10 million by whatever amount was raised from an increase in bus fares under that example.
Thank you, Alder. Other questions? Alder Evers.
Yes, thanks, Mayor. With that logic, Dave, are there other sources of funds that could be raised? In the past, we have created revenue that subsidized Metro. Are there other alternatives that we could consider that perhaps would relieve some of the pressure on our budget, even increasing some of the fees that we put in place in the past?
Thanks, Alder. Great question. As long as that revenue is outside of the general fund, and we have pursued some strategies in the past, as you may recall, and we talked about, some of those strategies we've pursued are special charges. So we have the urban forestry special charge or the resource recovery special charge. Both of those helped to fund activities that were formerly in the general fund. And so that is not subject to the expenditure restraint limit. There's the vehicle registration fee in the transit fund. That again is outside of the general fund and similar to Alder Vidover's example of the bus fares. If the vehicle registration fee were increased, then that would mean less general fund subsidy would be needed. And then you may recall that in all of the discussions leading up to the referendum in 2024, we talked about an infrastructure special charge as a possible option in the future. That would be a new special charge. And that's an example of another option of a special revenue outside of the general fund that would have its own fund and costs would be paid for from that. But that is a process we have to go through as we did with urban forestry and resource recovery to put something like that in place.
Well, thank you. That's helpful. And perhaps that's the kind of thing that alders need to examine to how much our residents wish to take on additional fees. But regarding this 2% reduction, is it anticipated that agencies can handle this without layoffs, or is it anticipated that this will result in some layoffs?
I think it's difficult to say right now. I think our vacancy rate is above 2% at the moment, which would tend to lead to a conclusion that probably could absorb position reductions without layoffs. But it depends on where reductions might be considered. I'll just, these are proposals. that the agencies are putting together, ultimately they have to be decided upon by the mayor and then by the council as to whether or not they go forward, and those sort of issues can be sort of teased out at that time. But just with the big numbers, you know, looking at 2% versus what our vacancy rate is, you know, even if you have to do all the 2%, probably would not expect layoffs, but can't guarantee that.
One last question. I seem to recall last year we were facing the recently passed state law regarding potential cuts to protective services and the penalties that municipalities would have potentially endure. Could you reference that and explain how that may come into, you know, something that we should consider moving forward?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Alder. So I think you're referring to the maintenance of effort for law enforcement and fire and emergency medical services. And so the state put that into place about 3 years ago in tandem with significant statewide increases in shared revenue. And so under that requirement for law enforcement, the police need to, police spending in effect needs to meet one of three criteria. And basically maintaining the same number of law enforcement officers or maintaining the same share of the property tax levy for law enforcement officers, or maintaining the same amount, at least the same amount for employing law enforcement officers. So you have to meet one of those. And then for fire and emergency medical services, there's four criteria, generally similar to the three police. And then there's a training criteria as well as a response times. And you have to meet at least two of those four. If you don't meet those requirements, then the city would lose 15% of its shared revenue payment. And that's rough. 15% is roughly $1.5 million. Now remember, you have to have at least as much as the prior year. So the cost to continue alone in both of those agencies is, you know, increasing spending for salaries and benefits and things like that. But that is a factor that has to be kept in mind as the budgets are developed each year for the police and fire departments.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Vivier.
Thank you, Mayor. I see that Alder Figueroa Cole had her hand raised, and I was going to yield to her because I know she has to get to the Plan Commission meeting.
Alder Figueroa Cole, did you want to ask a question quick? She may already.
Thank you. I lost you on the phone. I'm sorry. Was the Dave, I may have missed this, I was multitasking. Do we have a target number that we need to be looking? I get the 2%, but what's the target number that we are trying to shoot for to avoid ERIP?
Well, we're a little over 7 million above the expenditure restraint limit.
Okay, so 7 million, not 8. I don't know, for some reason I thought it was 8 million, but it's a little bit over 7. That's the number. Mm-hmm.
7.2 right. million, I think. Yep.
7.2. Okay, thank you. That's really all I wanted to clarify. Thanks.
Thank you, Alder.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Alder Vivier, for yielding. Do you have questions?
Thank you, Mayor. I do indeed have a few questions for Dave. Thank you for the presentation, of course, Dave. I'd like to perhaps just go back to start here with where the questions began, and that's Metro Transit. And as you said, significant increase in Metro Transit subsidy, both this year and projected for next year. But first, let me say this. are we still on track, Dave, to have the 2026 operating budget projections and year-end resolution at the July 27th Finance Committee meeting?
Yes, we are.
And would you be able to do a bit of a deeper dive into Metro Transit's finances on that at that occasion?
Yes, and I think we would anyways, because, based on what we see from projections.
Yeah, thank you. That was my assumption as well. Are you able to just give us a very quick overview as to the breakdown in that estimated $9.5 million additional subsidy to Metro? You had mentioned in your presentation personnel, fuel, and paratransit contracts. Off the top of your head, could you give a ballpark as to like percentages or which are the leading pressures at this point?
I think it's a combination of, if we're just looking at the expenditure side, expenditures are up about 10%. That's what's projected for 2027 over the budget for 2026. Now, we expect the 2026 budget will need to be adjusted upwards for Metro, so that percentage might shrink. But it's primarily, I think the largest piece of this is the paratransit contracts. And I don't remember the exact amount. I think it's maybe $3 to $4 million over current levels. And that's, as I understand it, these contracts are at an end. They have to be renegotiated. And, the landscape for that has changed in terms of inflation, service levels, and things like that. And I think, Metro will need to look at how those services are delivered. But that's, I think, the biggest piece of it. Obviously, there's personnel cost increases in Metro. Probably the most significant piece of that is overtime. That continues to be an issue in their budget. And then fuel is another piece of this. Obviously, with more electric buses, less of a reliance on diesel fuel, but it's still a significant share of their, power spend, for lack of a better term. And, we have higher fuel prices. So I'd say those are probably the primary components of what we're talking about. The other gap is really on the revenue side. The revenues don't grow, right? State aid is not increasing. Federal aid's not increasing. The fares really don't increase that much. Ridership has gone up somewhat, but fares overall are not going up. And then even the vehicle registration fee is relatively stagnant from year to year.
Yeah, thank you. And then on the Metro Transit revenue side, do I recall correctly that we had anticipated a significant revenue from the school Dodger bus service that never materialized?
Yeah, I think that may have been built into a prior budget. Last year's budget, there was some expectation, but I think that's still an open issue around how that might be addressed by Metro. But that's probably a better question for Metro to get into, maybe during the Finance Committee meeting when we're talking about projections.
Yeah, that would be great if their leadership, if Jamie and or others could be with us on July 27th. Thanks for that. Why not just pivot to one last question or two here? And that's kind of, I was reminded by your last slide, what's new with the budget guidelines for 2027 and so forth. And you had mentioned the introduction of results. Madison service indicators being published in the executive budget book, et cetera. And that got me to thinking, well, all of the agency, will everything that we're requesting of agencies be published and available to the public? And I know it takes a few weeks after they're due to your office, but will everything be available to the public that you just reviewed? The one area that I specifically wanted to make sure would be part of the agency budget request, and I don't know if it'll be in the transmittal memos from the division and department heads, is the 2% reduction requirements, as well as the optional 5-year long range planning document.
Thanks for that question, Alder. So we do publish the agency request. It usually takes about 3 weeks or so after, 3 to 4 weeks after the budgets are due. So they're due July 17th this year. The reduction proposals are part of the budget request. The 5-year plan is not a part of the budget request. It's separate. Those won't be published. And they're due actually later. So those will be sort of outside of the budget process. And then the indicators will come in the executive budget, and will only be for agencies that have gone through the data engagement, which is a lot of the agencies, but not all of them.
Thank you. Will the long range planning documents that again, I know are optional for agencies, will those at least be available to alders? Would your office be able to share those with the alders when they're available?
I'm not sure of the format on those yet, but we can get back to you about that.
Okay. Thank you. Obviously, the most that's available, the better. Appreciate the presentation again, Dave. Thanks. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Lankella.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Director Sumitki. It's really helped me to see your presentation. Thank you for bringing that together, those numbers. Is this available for us? I didn't see it in the legislature. Is this can be shared with us at all for future?
The presentation's attached to legislature. Should be. If not, we'll attach it, but I'm pretty sure it's attached.
I think that in the email inviting other alders to participate in today's meeting, I think that was linked as well.
Yeah, it's on Budgetstar.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Alder.
If you have any trouble, just email me and we can send it to you again.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Dave? If not, thank you, Dave. That is the last item on our agenda, so I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Moved and seconded to adjourn. Is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor of adjournment? Seeing no objection, we stand adjourned. Have a good evening, everyone.
And happy birthday to Dave tomorrow.